It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And I'm going to tell you two things about this movie, okay. Besides the title,
okay,
which I will get to in a minute. But I'm only going to tell you two things about this movie. The first one is that it is a fairly recent, I want to say it's 2016 or whatever, it's present day film from Bangladesh.
Okay.
Which I don't know that I've ever seen a film from Bangladesh before. It is a modern day horror movie. It is pretty well produced. It is filmed well. The effects are pretty well. It is a very serious horror movie. Like, it is not being fun. It is not winking at itself. It is taking itself very seriously. Second thing I want to tell you about it is that this Bangladeshi movie is about an ancient evil game of Parcheesi.
Oh.
Or for those of you who are a little younger than that, an ancient evil game of the game Sorry. Parker Brothers game Sorry. I did learn from Wikipedia after this looking up the game of Ludo, also known as Parcheesi, also known as I forget what else, although surprisingly very diverse countries have titles for the game that basically translate into keep you cool, don't get pissed off, is the title. But the game has a rich and storied and quite ancient history, and it eventually turned into Parcheesi and Sorry and Trouble and several other games. So that was interesting to look up afterwards. Based on those first things I told everyone, I think from that you can decide if you want to see this movie or not.
Hmm.
Like that, because that, in some ways, just that description sums up my feelings about that. I mean, how did I feel about the movie? How you would think I would feel about a movie who had those two facts there.
And it was, and so it's...
It's called Ludo, L-U-D-O. It's on Netflix right now.
Streaming.
Yes.
And, Is it dubbed or does it have?
It has a ton of. It's funny that because I went into look because that was the thing I'm watching. I'm like, oh, it's clearly, you know, it's Indian
subtitles
or maybe Pakistani,
or
but I'm like, I kind of know what Urdu sounds like. I recognize Hindi enough to recognize this is definitely not Hindi.
Hmm.
So I'm like, so I paused it and went to the audio and subtitle things to find out and found out it's in apparently Bangladesh's native language is called Banga, I believe.
Okay.
And then it had several subtitles options, none of which were Banga, which I found interesting. Because there's no deaf people there. But it had like four, it was like French, Spanish, English, and whatever. Yeah, so I watched it in the, and it had a little bit of that thing I had talked about before that I noticed when people were speaking Hindi, of the slipping into English.
Mm-hmm.
But this one seemed much more what I expect, like certain words that were clearly appropriated are said like English words a lot more. This was not that in and out thing that I got from that other movie, which I found so fascinating, which no one commented on because we have a super waspy audience.
I also saw a movie recently that
I
was
don't believe you.
Indian and going back and forth into English and stuff was happening just like you described. I could not for the life of me see a pattern.
It's amazing, though. Like,
it out.
I kind of want to do like whatever it takes to like study this. Like, I don't know if it's just language classes or what. I'm just like, I want to know more about this very much. But to do that, either somebody has to tell me I have to go to Wikipedia. I suppose I could go to Wikipedia. Or I would have to read nonfiction, and we know that last one's not happening.
Well, a linguist would probably have to study it. I mean, a linguist can spot...
I'm sure a linguist has studied it. I mean, tons of them.
Maybe.
Like, somebody clearly knows the answers to this. We didn't just discover this, you and I. But
well, no. Just because something isn't new doesn't mean anyone's ever studied it.
Maybe it's a patois. I've never known a patois except Creole. Except, no, Creole is a different thing. Patois is a variant on a Creole. Maybe it's a Creole.
Well, I mean...
I don't know any of this shit.
There are a lot of things that people know about that know that they're linguistic oddities, if you will, but they've never studied them because, you know, that takes money and...
Maybe it's Voltron, is a language Voltron a thing? I feel like that's one I've heard.
I've never heard of that.
Like Voltron, like with the lions and the... It's like that, but... Wait a second. God damn it. Are you the only person in the world that I can't use that joke on because you don't fucking know what Voltron is?
I don't know what Voltron is. I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Oh my God, why do I associate with you?
I don't know.
That is terrible.
Why is that terrible?
All good little children in this country in the 80s were introduced to what we called back then Japanimation via...
Okay, but
either Star Blazers or Voltron.
The 80s wasn't really my thing. And I mean, I graduated high school in 87. And pretty much from 84 on, I wasn't really paying attention to what kids were doing. So.
Sad.
83 on, probably.
I feel like even my parents know what Voltron is. That might be a stretch. My parents some days don't know what each other's names are. So, anyway, if you'd like to tell William what Voltron is and how bad he is about it, please write into the head of themagicaltalkinghead.com. Also, hello. No, we're definitely going to have time where I'm going to explain Voltron to you. You need to understand Voltron.
Why?
Also, they have a rebooted series on Netflix. But
I remember hearing that. No, I remember you talking about it because I think you watched it. But I didn't.
No, I hadn't watched that one.
But I don't know anything about it other than things you've said.
Yeah, no. There's a long and storied history involving how many Voltrons there are, like in completely different character things. Because what we all knew as Voltron growing up was only one of the Voltrons. And there's lots of different ones, and I've seen the toys of some of the ones that never made it here. And then some of them made it here. There's a lot going on. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that will get this in-depth about Voltron and be nothing to do with Voltron at all. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 342, I think.
And just so you guys know, I've witnessed over the last couple of days, I am still in that zone where, like, I can't get enough of talking at other humans. And unfortunately, that appears to be what it is, which shouldn't surprise me in the long run. It's that it's not talking with other humans. I'm really excited to be talking at other humans today. My boss literally had to be like, okay, all right. I'm going, bye, and hang up on me at a meeting today, because I wouldn't stop, after she told me repeatedly. I worked from home today, I'm working from home tomorrow. I don't like working from home. I feel like I would like working from home, but I don't. It's too quiet, the little laptop is too small, I don't know what it is. But, sadly, it might be good for me, because today I got a lot done, like more than I would have expected to get done. I got to work, so. Who knows? But after tomorrow, I'll be back on my full time.
Good.
At work again. So anyway, for those of you just joining us in the show ever, bye. This was not a good intro to our podcast, I feel like. Like, I don't mean this episode, I mean as an entity.
Oh.
I feel like if you were going to start on our podcast, this would not be a good intro.
We can probably say that about
most yes. And I've just decided we have a moral imperative to start doing that. So I'm just going to say here, my rating of this intro as an introduction to the entire conglomeration that is Magical Talking Hat Limited, LLC, I have no idea, DDS. I'm going to give this one a 27.
Mm.
And I'm not going to tell you what the scale is. So,
it's higher than expected.
Unless it's out of a billion, you know, who knows? It's
still higher.
Wow, all right.
Doesn't really matter what the
scale as is. Scale approaches infinity, quality remains less than one. might be the best math joke I've ever told on the show,
good.
And I'm not 100% sure I did it right.
Well,
yeah, for those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, like to write in to that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. Period. Right?
Yeah, well.
I can't.
Then the hat does something.
I'm getting to that part. This is a thing. It's like, what's your phone number? Like,
oh yeah, you never dial it.
As long as you don't look.
Oh. Right.
As long as you don't think about it. If we're just playing word association, and I hit you with your phone number, you're fine. But if I'm like William, don't think about this till I tell you here. What are the digits in your phone number? And I don't know. There's a scene from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Dead about this. I think I've referenced that before. Anyway, yes, the hat. All on its own, magically, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically inside the hat itself. It's clearly enthusiastic but useless servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored. That's the whole show. We do that for about an hour, supposedly. I'm still on the recovery. I may still have a little bit of medication head, so leave me alone.
Okay.
It was mostly to the listeners. I don't think you would have a problem with it, but other people would be like, why are you so stupid? My brain's not there to get back yet. Because I'm still taking a little bit. And in fact, I didn't think it through. I woke up one morning this week with a lot of pain, and so I took what would be the shortest painkiller in terms of how long it was supposed to last,
mm-hmm.
and didn't think about it was also the strongest. So I literally had to move a meeting and was like, can we do this tomorrow? Because I'm on drugs right now. It's like, this is a low point in my career. I'm too high to have your meeting right now.
A lot of people think that's the best time to participate in a meeting.
I had a delivery. I tried. I legitimately thought of you and tried to order early enough. It did not work. I really tried.
Yes.
And the sad thing about me trying and it not working is I'm unlikely to try again for a very long time. So this was your one shot for me to be nice to you. And I'm just saying, it's me. Come on. Trey's dinner's here. No, I tried. I ordered early, but I also ordered from downtown. So
downtown.
And really, when you're not here, the delivery people complain. They miss your smiling face.
Sure, they do.
Yeah, but anyway, life is getting much better. It's just not going fast enough. Standing and walking are still hurting me more than I'm expecting them to. I think it'll still be a week or two before I even go back and just do real basic stuff at the gym.
Can you sit at your chair all right? Or when you?
Yeah, pretty much. It became a stamina issue. I was hoping to maybe have the option to work partial days this last week, but because of the way they have to do the medical paperwork and stuff, it was no, you have to work just half days this week. I was like, okay, I'm so glad they made me do that. Because every time I'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. It doesn't hurt when I'm in the chair. But then eventually I get stiff in the chair, so I have to walk around a little bit, which is fine. But then it started to hurt. And so I was like, not a thing. But at the same time, after like 3 hours of it, it's like, I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Can I lay down? So. But yeah, next week I'll be glad just to get things back to normal at work. Yeah, nothing really interesting happened this week. How about you?
Nope, nothing really interesting.
I do have some media to talk about besides the game of Haunted Parcheesi.
No, go ahead.
What was the one you were going to help me remember?
I don't know, something about a monster thing.
Yeah, I meant to talk about this last time, and I forgot, because it had been a while since I had seen it. It was sort of, I think it was right before, like maybe the night before I started getting laid up in bed. Trish and I saw a movie called A Monster Calls. It was Trish's idea. She had been interested in it for a while.
That's,
it was on
that's
HBO.
Polite for a monster to call first.
Yes.
And just not just showing up, you know.
Yes. For those of you who don't remember, there were trailers for it. It was marketed pretty well. The big thing was it had a big tree monster thing voiced by Liam Neeson. And that was the main thing. And I sort of figured out, I think I read up on it a little bit because I was curious. Something about it sparked a very young adult vibe to me.
Okay.
Which is two strikes against automatically for me. I know I should get over that bias, but I really got it going.
Why should you get over it?
Because one out of every 1.5 books is young adult at this point, and because there's some really good young adult out there. And if I just disregard the entire section completely, I'm going to miss out on some good things. That Interworld trilogy that I listened to recently, that's really good. It's young adult, but I even found it I found it good. I didn't find it unrealistic or condescending. Like, yes, the language was slightly cleaner than I would believe from a teenager, but like the level of vocabulary and all that felt very up there and good. And see, I'd miss out on that if I just threw it away completely. But it's still a pretty big mark against you. And I look it up, and this is honestly a genre, and you all know it, but a kid dealing with their mom dying of cancer movie. Like, that's a genre at this point. And there's some great movies like that. My Neighbor Totoro, incredible movie. Technically, that's the genre. This one's a little more upfront about that sort of thing. And so I'm not interested. I'm like, Liam Neeson voicing a tree. Kid's mom dying of cancer, coping with that, using Liam Neeson in a tree. Does not sound... And it's clearly, like, not... I'm not... It's like PG or something. So I'm like, whatever. But she wants to watch it. I'm in there. I'm doing stuff on the computer. I'm like, fine. I got nothing else going on. So, I do not, like, forbid her to watch it because I am in there. So she starts watching it, and I'm kind of paying attention. Whatever. I tell you, I wasn't interested in this movie, and I didn't want to like this movie. Something about it, it's off of an old property. The way, I don't know, it felt very cash-grabbing to me. I think because Liam Neeson voiced your goddamn CGI monster. I'm like, that to me, I'm getting tired of that. So I wanted to dislike this movie. And eventually I'm like, oh, visually it's interesting. Because what it is, there's a lot of stories that happen in it, and they take place in an artistic... Like, it's not quite stop motion, but it's an animation style scenes that are very interesting and pretty to watch. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that part's good. So the parts that are not in the real world like that, those are the good parts there. And then later, I'm still sort of watching. I'm kind of watching at this point. I'm like, okay, it's a good movie. It's not for me. Like, I'm not the group. It's a different generation. But then I'm like, fuck it, this movie's good. Like, it is what it is. It's a age appropriate kid dealing with parent dying from cancer movie. So you're not magically gonna, it's like when I tell people, if you don't like superhero movies, you're still not gonna like Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're like, I don't like this, you're not gonna like it.
Sure.
But I thought I wouldn't. I didn't intend to. I don't tend to like those. I'm not going to say I cried, but I got the misty thing going at certain points. Well, and here's the huge one for me. I felt the story and the message it was telling was different than what I believe to be the same message that gets told over and over in that kind of movie. So I was like, this has something slightly new to say, and I like that. So yeah, I mean, you could do worse. And if you've got kids old enough to deal with that concept and old enough to deal with there's a lot of big shadowy giant tree monster things. I mean, he doesn't do anything bad, but like he comes out from behind and he's huge, and you know. So if you have a kid who's scared by that kind of shit, they're probably too young. But otherwise, I think this is a good movie for kids.
Okay.
I have no way to gauge that. So listen to me, folks. Clearly, they do have to talk about one other This one's going to get weird.
Okay.
We watched, so far, the first two episodes of The Orville.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you playing along at home, if you're not familiar, The Orville is the new hour-long comedy, I guess action comedy, maybe, science fiction show created by, designed, whatever, by, and starring Seth MacFarlane of Family Guy, American Dad, Ted, Million Ways to Die in the West fame.
Mm-hmm.
I have such weird feelings about this.
Why?
Because originally I was like, this thing is going to polarize me. Because here's the thing. I like Star Trek. Okay. I loved Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
This is clearly just that. Based on the trailers, I'm like, this is clearly what this is. With the humor of Seth MacFarlane. And here's the thing. I hate almost everything that Seth MacFarlane does. But I believe he undeniably is very very clever and very creative. It's just... His taste level to me is horrible. I don't like his taste level, and I don't like his perspective on things. But he has the ability to be really creative and really funny. And so I'm like, and I know that he loves the old, I mean, that's why he's the one reason Cosmos came back. Because he loved it as a kid, stuff like that. And he loves that, and he loves it when it's about him, you know, even better. So I'm like, he's going to want this to be perfect. So it's sort of like which version of Seth MacFarlane will win out kind of thing. And so I'm like, I have to at least see.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched it. And it... After all of that, my answer is... yeah, maybe. My answer is the most tepid answer I can ever give. And of course it has a very long explanation why.
Was it funny at least?
Yeah, it was. I definitely laughed, but like, there's so much here. Okay, let's get stuff out of the way to begin. It is, without question, 100% a satire of Star Trek: The Next Generation specifically.
Like Galaxy Quest and things like that?
Even more than Galaxy Quest.
Okay.
Way more than... Like, no, Galaxy Quest was a riff on sci-fi shows like Star Trek. Star Trek being the primary one it took from. This is... somebody just decided to do Star Trek The Next Generation, but was really careful not to get sued.
Okay.
Like, the effects, the general look... That it's not called the Federation, it's called the Union. They're not called the Klingons, they're called... I forget what they're called, something. But, like, it's all fucking there. very intentional. I mean, this is not like anybody's fooling anybody. Like, this is the plan. The doors sound the same, like, the whole thing. But it is... Yeah, so it's a satire. You can question how dry the satire is and how good the satire is. But 100% this show is Star Trek The Next Generation... satire.
Sure.
And this is the thing again. Seth MacFarlane clearly loves Star Trek The Next Generation. It was clearly very formative to him, very much like me. I was just at the age. I'm one of those people out there who actually really liked Wesley Crusher at the time. Later, I got my shit together a little bit. But back then, I was totally on his side. He was my POV, like, and it worked. So he clearly loved Star Trek The Next Generation and wants to be in it, and now he is. But he also knows his thing is being funny, and his thing is being a certain type of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of jokes. I mean, it's full of jokes. Quite a bit of them are funny. He hits on tropes that I think are a little bit creative from what's been done before. He has not crossed any lines for me. It's been edgy sometimes, but there's been nothing where I'm like, hold on a second. Like, the closest it's been is I've been like, yeah, no, that's a hacky joke. which I always do with Seth MacFarlane, because he definitely goes for quantity first. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But, and it's what, if you think a satire of Star Trek The Next Generation that was done with just such intricate detail and is funny would be a good thing to watch, this one is solidly mediocre. Mm. That being said, there isn't another one. Mm. Galaxy Quest is the closest, and it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this show okay? Yeah. Is this show great? Or even maybe good, although I hear it gets better after the first couple episodes, too. I don't know if I'd say great or even very good. Mm. Is there anything else you can get to fill this niche? No, this I've never run into this before. This is if you think Star Trek The Next Generation really could use a good poking at this point, and you think Seth MacFarlane is capable of funny jokes, then sure. Two major complaints I have, one of which is silly specific, and the other one, I don't even know. Major complaints I have. One, this is set in, I want to say 2450. It's 24-something. They told us in the first episode.
Okay.
There are so many late 20th century, early 21st century jokes and references and explanations for things. And they do play off the fact that some people don't know those references, but it's all the aliens don't know the references. So just every human in the 25th century, like, knows who Kermit the Frog is, or knows. There's a bit where one of the guys, where the black guy says, "Oh, yeah, it's like going to Compton. If you're a white guy, you can't go unless a black guy says it's okay for you." Which I'm like, that is a joke. And I'm like, actually, like, in some ways, that's not that bad a joke, I think. But what the hell is it doing in 25th century in space?
I don't know.
Like, Compton's not a thing. And if it is, it's not the same thing it was 500 years ago. And what? Like, just jokes like that. But it segues also. But, I mean, they're still funny jokes. It's just I'm constantly nagged by this, like, how would everybody know who these people... Why would you admire this very specific 20th century athlete or something? Like, kind of silly. Star Trek would throw those in, but they're just all over here. And then the other thing is the black guy. And I say this because there is one black person playing a black human. There are some people in heavy latex alien outfits and stuff that I suspect could be black underneath, but they're not playing a black person. There's only one, and he's fine. But he is, he is the most generic token black guy cast member ever.
Ever?
To me, like... To the degree that I 1% of me is like, is this on purpose? Because if it is, it's brilliant. But I don't think it is because they're slowly turning out of it. But it was very much, he was just the guy for one of the new guys to be friends with coming on the ship. And he says the stuff, like he says man and, you know, stuff like that. And he uses the proper slang or whatever. And it didn't get into weird, like, minstrel shows. I mean, he just was just a dude, but he was... Clearly, he was saying lines that you would have written differently if it was a white guy, and he's the only black guy there, and all of his lines were like, yeah, man, you do that. Like, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what? And it's fun, because luckily the guy that he sort of became friends with, they're getting to know each other in the two episodes I've seen, and they have chemistry, and so I think that's pulling it more into a character, but originally I was just like, this guy is so generic, the one black guy. Because, you know, that was a thing in, like, sitcoms, a lot in the 90s and stuff. Yeah, the one black dude, and so that's why I'm wondering. I'm like, could this have been on purpose? If it's not, Seth's people should get on telling people that's what this is. So yeah, that was way too much time on it. If you never see it, your life is the same. I'm serious. I am discovering that I love the idea of a funny parody of Star Trek: The Next Generation. Because I am in that place where I grew up with it. I loved it. And now I see how hokey and weird it was in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you want that kind of show, this is your only option. So, but he's planted some... Like, there's an alien who's artificial, like a robot kind of thing going. And he was surprised that he's on the crew because their species is notoriously racist. in the sense that they think all organic life forms are inferior. And so this guy's here, he's sort of to study other species. Like, he's sitting in the pocket for racist parodying all over the place. And these first two episodes, he didn't do it, but I'm like, it's goddamn Seth MacFarlane. And so he can do this kind of stuff in a way that I'm like, that is skewering well and insightful. But all I know is he's going to push hard. Like, I'm super glad we didn't make a very big deal of having a gay character in the beginning. Although we do have a unigender species, which is a whole other thing we're making kind of dumb jokes about. But, so yeah, like, there's a lot of stuff loaded in here that I know he could ruin. But so far it's good, and Adrian Pilecki plays his first officer / ex-wife because she cheated on him. That's basically the plot of the first episode. All that's crazy. But she's the first officer. They have good chemistry, and the actors do. The cast in general is pretty tight. So, it has potential. I don't know. But, yeah, that's even more than I would say about Voltron right there. So, sorry. That took so long. My boss has stopped listening to the podcast because of you.
Oh. Well. That happens, I'm sure.
Guys, it's like sad puppy face. He just took that as, like, genuine and just how the world works. No, motherfucker. It's a joke. She hasn't listened to last week's because she hasn't seen it yet. And when she found out we were going to talk about it, she doesn't want any spoilers or anything or any opinions thrown. So she's going to go watch it. I think she's going tonight. And then she'll go back and listen.
Okay.
So that is a joke.
But you haven't seen it.
No.
Are you going to?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It just doesn't... Yeah. I mean, given what a big deal it is, it's quite possible I will see it on a streaming service later. But I certainly don't think I'll go to the theater and see it. You know what I might go to the theater and see?
What's that?
The New Kingsman. Because I was talking... We've talked about this before, too. Loved the movie. Like, actively lauding the movie while watching the movie. Talking about how this is what I want. Get rid of James Bond movies. This is the movie I want. Amazing. Super violent, but still, just loved this movie. It was great. And then the last 30 seconds, which we talked about, and I hate it so much. And this is not me being smug or high horse or anything. Like, I genuinely wish I could just suck it up and move on. But I'm like, I'm so bothered by it. One of the most misogynist things I've seen in a mainstream film in years that, like, I'm like, I don't know that I can watch anymore. But then today I was talking with somebody because I'm like, it looks good or whatever. I'm like, I maybe should force myself because I have a feeling if it's any good, like the first one was, after about 10 minutes I'll be distracted enough to, like, be into it. I find it unlikely that I would spend 2 hours watching an awesome, freaky, violent action movie I've never seen before and just thinking about how pissed off I was about the end of one scene from... That seems unlikely. And because I genuinely do wish I could see this because it looks like it's going to be...
What if the last 30 seconds of this one is... They feel a similar trick.
Here's the thing. And I talked with somebody today on this. Because I harbored this myself for such a long time, and in general did not find an audience that was as outraged as myself and my wife were at the time, I thought maybe it wasn't the thing. But then it got big enough that it was in an episode of Obsessive Pop Culture Disorder, and to me, like, that means outrage about that is enough in the zeitgeist that probably enough pressure got put on them that they would just not do it. It, you know... Trump's America, I never say no one would do that because it's too possibly stupid, you know. But I wouldn't... I feel like it became enough of a thing that they're like, yeah, people didn't like that. Especially because I don't feel like there was a big push on the other side of, like, no. We need no more movies to end in a misogynist anal sex joke. Like, that's what America... Let's make America great in that area again. I don't feel like there was a lot of that coming the other way.
Okay.
But... Movie studios are dumb.
Yes, they are.
And if there's something that big, I assume I hear about it before I see it, because I know people who are going to probably see it before me.
I just maybe heard something along those lines.
Oh, God damn it.
Is what I'm saying. Although it wasn't specific, and I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so I'm worried. Should I not have said that?
No,
honestly, I would rather have spoilers than things that are going to save me from shit like that.
Except I don't really know. So
this just causes me to move my team. I have people.
Okay.
I have a network of people. Oh my God, this is a brilliant idea. Remember the show Leverage? Mm-hmm. I used to talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. I think I might be the Timothy Hutton of Leverage when it comes to pop culture information. Because I was talking about this, despite the fact that so much of this is dedicated to Simpsons, I've discovered that amongst my friends, I'm a pretty big pop cultural generalist. Because all of my friends are into things, and the things they're into, they really know. But they tend to be fairly narrow.
So it lets you be a broker.
But frequently, I would... I'll say something, and one or two of the people in the room, and it's never the same people, are like, what are you talking? I don't even know what that is. So I'm like, maybe I'm just, like, right at the heart there. But you're right, but this is a thing, and to a lesser degree, this is how I work at work. I just keep track of who knows what, and I'm like, you know what, I'll talk to them. And we'll find out. We'll find out how to... So I'm like, I know...
Culture broker.
I know some people that I could reach out to get a spoiler-free or spoiler-light indication of if that sort of thing could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do that before I see it. And I hate to break it to you, but you're not that guy.
Oh, no, I know I'm not.
You are mine for a couple of things.
I don't know what that would be.
Certain older comics niches and certain literary properties. And you're one of my baseball guys. I literally think I've never had to use you because I need a baseball guy less often than I need a cosmetic surgeon, and I've never needed one of those. So, but if I do, you are absolutely
that's good to know.
At least in my top three baseball guys.
I read Jekyll and Hyde again this week. I've got this book of Robert Louis Stevenson stories, and that was in it, so I read it again. And then there's a bunch of other stories in it, and it's been really fun to read.
In the realm of things that segue nicely so I can contribute, but you're going to hate, probably, I feel like Netflix still has the BBC 6-episode series, Jekyll, based on it, that was very popular. That was done by Stephen Moffat, who does a lot of the Doctor Who stuff.
Well, I mean, I've seen that, but I don't remember... I don't know if Netflix... You mean, is it streaming, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
What I'm saying is, you could watch that as a follow-up. And the reason I say you'll hate it is not because I think it's bad. Apparently it's quite popular and it's quite good. But I feel like having so recently reread the original work, you'll be like, fuck this shit.
No, I liked it. I mean,
you already have seen it. I still haven't. It's on my list, but it's been on my list for
years. I thought it was really good. I mean, it's one of those where it's really popular to take the story and, you know, just like with Frankenstein... they make him made of dead body parts, you know, which isn't how the book goes. A really popular thing to do with Jekyll and Hyde is to have the Jekyll side not really know what the Hyde side is doing.
Which is not how the book goes. I knew that. Yeah.
But that's a
I feel like I've read the original.
That's a popular thing for them to do. But I mean, that didn't bother me. I mean, I thought it was really good. And the guy, the lead actor, I always forget his name.
I don't know. I just remember Gina Bellman was in it because a lot of people knew her first from that, and I was weird because I had been in Britain when the original Coupling came out, and so I knew her from that before, like, Leverage and things like that.
Well, anyway, the guy who plays Jekyll and Hyde, unless my recollection is wrong, they don't do anything to enhance
him. He just looks the same.
Well, he changes his appearance in a theatrical way, like someone on stage would.
Physically, biologically, nothing changes.
Yeah, they don't. They didn't like. For example, in the book, he looks so different. You'd really have to cast another actor.
Frequent ones are they're hairier.
Or in The Mummy, they did something with Russell Crowe's eyes or something. In this, as far as I know, they did nothing to him, and he did it all theatrically, and it was very effective. And I was very impressed with it. And I like that actor anyway. He's been in other things that I've seen that I liked. He was in a movie with Liam Neeson. It was really good. Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, it wasn't, didn't really go according to the book very much, but, yeah. You know, it was good.
I'm now developing a theory in my head that Jekyll and Hyde as a narrative genre is basically just an offshoot of the buddy cop film. Seriously! Look at the 80s and 90s. How many ripoffs of Jekyll and Hyde were they? Where they're like, this time he turns into a woman. This time he turns into a friggin' robot. This time he turns into a dog. Like, all the time.
Well, what I'm finding is...
This time he's black. I'm almost certain there was one that was this time he's black. There were like three or four, this time he's a woman. Like,
now, yeah. Have you read Treasure Island?
Yes. Very long ago, right. But I'm confident I actually read that one.
I've never read it, and I don't really have an interest in reading it. The collection I have is... It's actually very well curated, and it's by Barnes & Noble, where they've taken stories that are more or less going to be, you know, gothic in nature, I guess you could say. They fit in with that, the general aesthetic, I guess, with Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, one of them's even sort of a children's story, but they they all address themes of... gothic themes, I guess you could say. And I'm noticing that one of the things... So I don't think I would actually like Treasure Island, because I mean, even though I like how he writes, I think he's a great writer, I don't think I would enjoy it thematically. But all these stories, one theme that he seems to like a lot is this idea of, you know, don't even take one step on that evil path, or it's just going to suck you in. I mean, that's the whole thing about Jekyll, is that, you know, there are just certain undignified things, and I think that's how what he calls them, undignified things he wants to do. Maybe not even immoral. You know, things other people can do,
yeah,
and nobody even thinks it's immoral or illegal, but because of his station, he can't do it. And so that's the stuff he's doing at first as Hyde, and then it kind of gets worse and worse. A lot of his stories are like that, where it's like, you know, yeah, you might think it's okay to dabble here and there, but pretty soon you're going to get carried away, so you better just avoid that.
I'd say Treasure Island, you could argue those themes are there.
Yeah.
They're a bit disjointed, because there's obviously Jim Hawkins and sort of his corruption, which doesn't... I mean, God damn it, people, I'm spoiling Treasure Island. Come at me. Like, whatever. Jim has I don't want to say a happy end, or maybe it is happy, but it's not. He doesn't die or, you know, get syphilis or anything like that. But there is also this whole component of... I think it's Long John specifically is the one who sort of wasn't... Like, things he did in his past that were theoretically behind him coming back, and it was more the idea that once you step off the path, even if you go back, I feel like there were themes of, you know, like, once you've committed the sin, you're done. Will always get you.
And it's not that some of his characters who dabble do end up okay in the end, but not without a lot of pain and trouble.
Yeah.
And most of them don't end up okay in the end, obviously, like Dr. Jekyll didn't. So...
In some ways, I always kind of feel like Treasure Island was the first attempt at real, like, postmodernism, you know, hundreds of years too early.
Really?
Mostly because
I don't know.
No, because I also really don't like Treasure Island. I do not think it's a good book.
Okay.
But to me, I feel like it was the first ever clumsy attempt to be like, why does everybody think pirates are so romantic? Here's what it would really fucking be like. And it's still a pulpy adventure story, but that's what it feels like to me, is it's very much... You know, young boy thinks pirates are scary but exciting. Eventually learns pirates kind of suck and have shitty lives.
I actually might like that. I don't know.
Because it's been so long since I've read it, people, absolutely go to the blog and tell me the things I got wrong. No, I feel like there is a better than even chance that most of what I've told you is absolute bullshit. So those of you who know Treasure Island or want to go to Wikipedia...
It's not long, is it?
And look, no, it's not. I don't think it's an adult book.
No, it isn't. He wrote it for his, like, nephew.
And I feel like I read it in, like, Johnny Tremaine era, so I was pretty young. I mean, it's not long.
Well, an interesting thing...
I feel like I had to read it more than once, and I've seen, like, three or four different movie versions, and I've just never liked
it. He does change how he writes depending on who his potential audience is.
Because
there's a story in this collection that was clearly written for kids, and it's supposed to be written in almost a fairy tale, folktale kind of way, which, of course, I like those, so that didn't bother me. But it interested me how different it was. And for one thing, it did have a happy ending, but also it was a little more sparse in how he described things, because he likes to have those opulent paragraphs that a lot of literary, you know, where you just go on describing things or how you feel about things, especially in the romantic period, you know. Mm-hmm. They always love to go on and on about how they felt about something or how in love they were with some woman or whatever. And he does that. But in the stuff he writes for kids, it's, you don't get as much of that. So it was kind of interesting to see how he changes depending on his audience. But when I found out that he wrote Treasure Island for his nephew or whoever it was, I thought, well, I don't know if I'd be interested in that. But all these stories are very interesting. In fact, if anyone is interested, Barnes & Noble put this collection together. It's called The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Other Stories or something like that. The book is, the cover of the book is attractive. It's very well designed, but it's a soft, it's like a faux leather soft cover type of thing. You know, it's not hardback.
Yeah.
Which I wish was a hardcover, but I'd just sooner have that. But it looks nice, and the pages are
like
nice.
Like people imagine Moleskine journals are before they find out what Moleskine journals are.
I guess. And the paper's nice in it and everything. So I think it's a good book just as books go, but if you like that kind of thing, I highly recommend it. I think of all the writers I read from that era, I would say he's the best for me. Like, I like reading him. I enjoy reading his stuff. I mean, still, I'd say that Frankenstein is my favorite book from all of those things. And I probably like...
I prefer Boo Berry.
And I probably like Dracula better than I like Jekyll and Hyde. But just comparing each person as a writer... I guess he's a better writer than the rest of them, in my opinion.
We are running low on time, and I absolutely remembered something that I forgot to get to before that I was going to get to at the beginning. So
what's that?
Well, I had forgotten. Later, I realized to give you this, and then I lost it. Here's the DVD to the room.
Oh no.
I was reminded because my gaming group got together and didn't do any gaming because that happens a lot. And I ended up making them watch the trailer, and they are still somewhat unironically upset that I introduced them to this film, and that just doesn't happen. But it reminded me that this was the thing. It was like an old person.
What's it supposed to have won?
Probably Golden Raspberries. I think it swept the Golden Raspberries.
I can't see without glasses. What's it say down there at the bottom?
Winner. Down at the bottom.
Winner
Audience Award, New York IIFVF.
What? What's that?
I have no idea. You're the film nut.
I've never heard of it.
I've realized that worst case scenario, by having other people watch this film, it could be... Like, that sounds like one of the shitty plots from one of those Rapture movies. Like... This could be bringing on the apocalypse. Like, this could be a devil spawned thing that I'm doing. And I've decided that if it is, I'm okay with it. Because I feel like that's kind of a badass way to ruin the world. But I just wanted to lay the cards out on the table there. My boss loved it. I'm not the only one. Even if you don't find it funny, it's fascinating. Because you just have to remember, like, this was real. This is what... Do you want me to just read you the back
the
cover?
The Room...
I can just read
is an electrifying... Electrifying...
Electrifying...
American black comedy about love, passion, betrayal, and lies. Betrayal and lies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not just betrayal.
If that makes you laugh, you're going to love this movie.
It's what happens in real life. You could be with your loving woman, and all of a sudden, boom... She's in bed with your best friend or a family member. That's betrayal and lies.
Yeah.
The Room depicts the depths of friendship and relationships in one's life and realizes life's real and most asked question. Can you ever really trust anyone? Are you ready to see reflections of your life? Oh, hi, Mark. No, it doesn't say that.
Yes. Yes, I am presuming he at least okayed, if not wrote, all of that, because it's still his property. And, well, that's the big thing. Nowadays, he says it's a black comedy. Watch it. it was clearly not meant to be a comedy. Like, it's...
It's experience this quirky new black comedy. It's a riot, end quote, but no quote in front of it. Like, it's supposed to be quoting somebody.
Probably him.
But there's no quote.
That's the picture that was on the billboard for 6 years.
That's a terrible picture.
Yeah, no, and it was on a billboard. He calls it Angry Man.
It doesn't look angry. It looks like...
Dude.
3 in the morning, really drunk man.
You're so... I'm not going to lie. There's an erotic component to how innocent you are in relation to this movie and how you're going to come out the other side. Like, the jokes you're making now, I'm like, I wouldn't even have thought of that because that is so much less than the ridiculousness, than the insanity, than the random, why would you ever, that you are going to see. Like,
scene selection, well, that's good.
Definitely. I feel like I've told you this before. Remember that scene from the movie where the guy, Hitler's being really angry in the bunker that everybody on YouTube uses,
which,
and changes the
that's
subtitles?
A really good film. The film that it's from is really good.
Yes, it's a very good one. I feel like there's one about The Room.
Oh, is there?
And it's spot on. Oh my. In fact, it taught me things that I was like, holy crap, that's right. I didn't even notice how dumb that was. Like, it's...
Well, some of these scene selections are just quotes from the movie.
Yeah, no, it's going to be an experience.
You're Tearing Me Apart, Lisa, is section 21.
Yes.
24 is, I'll show them, I'll record everything.
Oh, hi, Mark, is the most famous line from the movie. You Are Tearing Me Apart, Lisa, is probably the second most famous.
And 40 is, we'll see about that.
Mm. A fun thing to note, and this one, it'll just be fun because you'll know this going in.
Okay.
Pretty much every scene that Tommy Wiseau's in, every conversation, starts with, oh, hi, whoever it is, and ends with, that's the plan. Like, every single one. But see, I haven't watched it since I learned this information, so you can watch it and see how accurate that is. But yeah, you and your lovely wife enjoy that. But then bring it back, because that's going in the safe deposit box.
Is this going to make me hate you? I mean, I don't hate anybody, but it's not impossible. I'm a human being.
If anything would. I mean, like, I feel like it's perspective. I mean, the fucker who made me watch The Forbidden Zone legit is mad at me for making him watch this. And I feel like that's an impossibility. But, like, if you're in my perspective, the movie's amazing. The movie...
It's a cultural phenomenon.
It is. It's fascinating because it is so real.
What's this face called?
I don't... Blue Steel, probably. I don't know. It's so real and, like, honest and awful. And it's why I'm so interested in seeing The Disaster Artist. Like, it comes from such a place of integrity and so far from anything resembling quality. It's just pure, genuine, heartfelt awfulness. Like...
Well, thanks for giving the widescreen version.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I feel like that's safer. We have very little time left. You should really get something out of the hat.
Okay.
Oh, this food's starting to smell good. I want to eat some of it.
I don't know why. I can't seem to just grab one. I always grab two or three.
They're like Lay's potato chips.
Whatever. They're more like Pringles. You know how you never eat just
once
one
Pringle. Once you pop, you can't stop.
No, I mean, you never just eat one. It's like there's a stack of them and you stick them in your mouth.
Yeah.
That's how I do it anyway.
Hold on. Teachable moment. Pringles slogan is, once you pop, you can't stop. Lay's actual slogan is, bet you can't eat just one.
Bet you can't eat just one, that's right.
So I'm just saying, Pringles is not a better choice, because literally, the slogan for the food is, bet you can't eat just one.
Okay. Wow, there's an asterisk on it. I think it's been a long time since we saw one of those. The plots to modern blockbusters are too complicated. Epic. Discuss. Complicated / epic. The plots to modern blockbusters. Well, here's my feeling about some of that is,
mm-hmm.
I think I've discussed before, I don't really like action movies. I don't mind a movie that's got action in it. Like, to me, a superhero movie shouldn't be made like an action movie. It's a different kind of movie with action in it. Certain thrillers obviously have action in them, but movies that are primarily about the action, I don't really like. However, if I see one, I do tend to think sometimes they try to get too cute with the plot. Mm-hmm. There's no need to do that.
Yeah.
No, first of all, since it's an action movie, nobody expects the plot to be complicated. And second of all, no movie is going to be judged on its goodness or badness based on how complicated the plot is. Nobody has to have a complicated plot in any movie. You don't have to be Christopher Nolan and make things overwrought and complicated for it to be quote-unquote good. A movie...
Although that actually is a good camouflaging technique.
I suppose.
A lot of people think a movie is good. I even fall victim to this, and Liam's like, no, it was just really needlessly complicated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which made it seem like it was clever.
No, the quality of the movie...
Inception.
Yeah, the quality of a movie...
What am I saying? Half the Christopher Nolan films.
Yeah, the quality of a movie shouldn't, anyway, have anything to do with how complex the plot is. Any movie can have a simple plot and be great. Mm-hmm. And an action movie... ought to have a simple plot, period.
So that we can focus on...
Audience. Yeah, exactly. Well, and because usually the motivations of your characters in an action movie are very straightforward and simple. That's one of the things people like about it. That's one of the things I can like about a action movie is I understand these characters and what they want, even though I don't know the characters very well. The reason I don't like action movies is because... I'm one of those rare people, I guess, that doesn't really care about explosions and crashes and things like that. So, I mean, if by blockbusters and a disproportionate number of blockbusters are action movies, I would have to agree that, yeah, that's just... I don't even know why someone who's making a straight-up action movie even invests the time and money to make a complicated plot.
Well, I feel like cinema, to a large degree, is streamlining to where we're getting close to where there's going to be, like, three kinds of movies. There's going to be the big superhero, spy, whatever, action thriller or action comedy, the giant tentpole action movie, the quirky romantic comedy, and the Oscar bait, the historic biopic.
Sure.
Oscar bait. Those are going to be the only three kinds of movies that we have.
Maybe that's already the way it is.
Oh, and PG-13 horror movies. Tomb Raider? No. Oh my god, no. Have you seen the trailer for the movie for Tomb Raider that's coming out?
Yeah.
We don't have time. How did you feel?
I didn't care for the trailer very much.
Oh.
But there was a featurette where they were talking to her about becoming Lara Croft or whatever, mm-hmm. and I thought that was great.
It's, I will bring it to you in like 2 minutes if you want, or you can, I mean, you can stay here if you want, but.
I mean, I didn't hate it. I just didn't think it made it look, I mean, it wasn't
yeah.
like.
No, to me, the Wonder Woman very trailer. Much looked like this is the rebooted Tomb Raider game movie.
Yeah, that's what it looked like, sure.
Which, to me, is what I would want if they were going to make a Tomb Raider movie now.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, so much of it showed me what appears to be them getting it.
Oh,
in
I
that
see.
That trailer.
Saying. Yeah, but see, to me, I already knew all that before the trailer came out. So
yeah, that was the thing. Like, I would not have thought possible.
Oh, okay.
Like, and so much. I'm like, oh my god, they're treating her like the right. Like, oh my god, it's not about how pretty she is. Oh my god, like all the way down to she has a relatively normal looking chest. Like,
sure.
Like just so much. And a lot of stuff that I'm like, it's like Indiana Jones, which is a huge part of what Tomb Raider was about. Like,
sure, sure.
They tried to make it girlified. I'm like, no, so much stuff you do in Indiana Jones, you could just do. So, like, I am cautiously very optimistic that they're doing a Tomb Raider movie right. Because all props to Angelina Jolie, and I did watch both of them, they don't age well at all.
Well, okay, so, most of the stuff you just said, I already knew they were doing.
Okay.
So
I was just blown away.
Well, good. Well, I was looking for the trailer to do more than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
at least you didn't get disappointed.
Sure, if I knew nothing about the film beforehand and saw it, I probably would have been thrilled. But there were most
of
that
stuff. I had a moment of cringe when I just heard they were making one. I was like, no.
No, most of the stuff I already knew, so I was hoping to see something more, maybe something that I thought would generate more interest in the film, and I didn't feel like I saw that. But like I said, there was a little featurette of Vikander talking about becoming Lara Croft, and I thought that was great, and that really got me excited about seeing the film. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's mostly going to be based on the game, which I've said the game. I thought both of the new reboot games were great, were fantastic. Yeah. So
well, and just and I mean, then they have flaws, but just like so much more.
Sure, sure.
In a direction you want to go, in a direction that makes sense. So very excited to speak to Stu's question real fast because we are out of time. But I just want to hit on one useless cryptic point that I'm going to use to summarize all of my argument about this. I was. And I think to a degree my wife was as well. Oh, by the way, I was supposed to say she is apathetic about the Orville and she liked When a Monster Calls. I actually got her opinion beforehand so I could actually point out. But anyway, I feel like I was both like it was refreshing and disconcerting that the stakes in Ant-Man were as low as they were. No pun intended at all. We were walking out, and Trish is like, so this was all about keeping one large company from having really cool technology that they could sell to people who might do bad stuff with it. As opposed to, this will take over the whole world, this will end the universe, you know, this will destroy time, shit like this was... I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, it's good to have that, but I was also like, but it also feels like, why the fuck did I watch that movie?
Well,
I don't care.
You know, it doesn't have to have low stakes.
No, but that's what I'm saying. There's this simultaneous jarring now to be that kind of thing. And I've always had an issue with that. The Amber Chronicles, Sexism Fairy Side, I love those books. They are 2 5-book series involving 2 different people. The first books, and then they made a role-playing game that we played for a long time. The problem is, the first 5 books threatened the existence of creation. So there was nowhere to build for the right, second set. Right, right. And when you play the role-playing game, it was like, what threat is going to... We saved creation. Like, what are we even... So that is a thing that happens, but I think this gives indie filmmaking hope because they can still do those stories, and if they do them well, Hollywood's not bothering. And I've seen some stuff lately that with very small amounts of budget have produced some very interesting effects, have produced some very compelling large stories in smaller, more modest situations. And we are over time, and I gotta give this food to my wife. So, any parting words, Batman?
No.
All right. Keep listening. Go to the blog and tell me how I'm wrong about Treasure Island and help me explain Voltron to William, because I'm not really going to tell him because I don't care.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.